Hi, welcome to the Brick Filmers Guild podcast, hosted by us, the Four Monkeys. On this podcast, we had the extreme pleasure of chatting with Alex Cobbs of Cooper Studios. Alex has been animating bricks since he was 12 years old and started the YouTube channel Cooper Studios in August of 2006. His channel now has over 48,000 subscribers and 16 million views. He has several video game-inspired brick films on the Machinima channel that have gained millions of views. His Halo-inspired brick film, Battle of the Brick, built for combat the movie, has over 44 million views on Game Trailer's YouTube channel and almost 600,000 on the Cooper Studios channel. His YouTube channel states, animation, Lego, video games, miniature filmmaking, stop motion, pop culture, and bacon. If you like these things, Cooper Studios is for you. This podcast is sponsored by BrickFlix. BrickFlix is a comprehensive guide to making your own stop-motion Lego movies. It's over 200 pages of useful brick filming tips. This book will show you how to make a stop-motion movie using little more than a camera, a computer, and your own Lego collection. Much of the photography in this book was produced by the amazing Paul Hollingsworth of Digital Wizard Studio. It's definitely worth checking out. So, without further ado, here's our conversation with Alex Cobbs. Good morning, Alex. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. It's awesome to be here.
So we are, we've been definitely wanting to talk to you for a long time. So glad we were able to work that out this morning.
Thank you. Me too. This is going to be, this is great. I haven't done a podcast interview in forever.
All right. So you want to get started? You got the first question going?
Well,
there?
I guess the first one would be the kind of the standard question is, how did you get into brick filming and, when did you?
Oh man, that's quite a long time ago. So I was definitely into Lego, you know, like every other kid way back in the day. And what happened was I got the Steven Spielberg Lego Movie Maker set. It was either for Christmas or my birthday. It must have been my birthday from my parents. And that little set with the little Logitech camera and this very simple software really opened up the whole door for me, because up until that point, I was only 12, right? But I was a huge fan of some of the really, really good children's shows at the time. Like, my favorite would definitely be Thomas the Tank Engine. And if you go back and watch the old, first couple seasons of that show, it's all done with miniatures, models, and actual camera work. You know, they didn't have video camera. They're using film. So when I got the Lego set, I said, oh, man, I can experiment with all this stuff. And that's really how I got into it. And I kept making movies. And over time, I got better camera and then better software. And I kept expanding. And it just snowballed from there, from that that one set. They did a great job with that set at the time.
Yeah, definitely. And from an animation standpoint, that show was definitely amazing. Although personally, with my kids, they were not into that. I found it a little on the kind of angry side. It wasn't as happy as some of the other ones. But from an animation standpoint,
that's why I liked it, I think. Yeah, because it's not so happy go like la 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 la. Like the first couple seasons, you know, the characters get into real predicaments. They insult each other, you know, because they're sticking to the book. And I thought that was more real. I don't know. I definitely
agree. I think it's more of a boy thing.
He's a couple years older than our children, so.
Yeah, a lot more than that.
Yeah, but I was a train nut as a kid. As a little kid, I could not let go of my little die-cast or wooden Thomas the Tank Engine toys as a kid. I just took those things everywhere. So that show just blew my mind. I must watch it thousands on VHS, you know. And then the filmmaking process of making that show just must have entered my subconscious or something, and over time I said, you know what, I can do this with the Lego bricks or any other toy. I could do it with any inanimate object, and that's how I got involved with animation.
That's awesome.
Cool. And you went to school for that, is that correct?
Yeah, I did. I went to Fitchburg State University. It's in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. It's near Worcester, Massachusetts, in the middle of the state. And I went there for film school for 4 years. And, you know, most of the training there is to teach you how to, you know, how to work in the industry. So how to do all the different jobs that you'd find on a film set. And then a lot of people went off to L.A. or New York and went into the film industry. But I had a very, very different awakening experience during that time. You know, because I was in college, I was, why am I here, man? You know, like, I don't generally enjoy what I was doing, you know, because you'd have to rent out the equipment, the big expensive camera equipment and the lights and all this stuff, and then you have to go film a shoot with the other students, and I was just not into it. And I think one of the best things we did as a group of film students, we decided to try to organize our own film outside of the class and try to make our own movie. And I became director, and lo and behold, the whole project fell apart in my hands. The whole project just completely collapsed when we were trying to do this. And I had to take full responsibility, right? And this was, I think, junior year, sophomore, junior year. It was late into my college career. And when that happened, I had to do some, like, serious soul searching. Like, I did, like, I remember a week and a half of good, like, wow, I don't know why I'm here. You know, why am I doing? And I realized that I should have been focusing more on animation rather than film. So my professors were very helpful in the fact that I went to them and told them this, and they accommodated me. They let me take a lot of graphic design classes and art classes along with my major, and I was able to learn some Flash animation and do some After Effects work and different things. And from there, I got a little bit of a better startup on you know, how to proceed with doing stop motion animation and stuff. And even my thesis project was stop motion animation, so it was really fun.
Wow, very cool.
What was your thesis project?
I called it. It was a film called, I forgot the name. It'll come to me. But what I did was I took a Bolex camera, 16 millimeter film, and Professor Zach, he was able to give me a, I believe it's a rare part that attaches to that camera. It's a frame clicker that's attached to a cable, and you push the button and it would literally expose one frame at a time of the 16 millimeter film. Or is it 8 millimeter? Whatever. Whatever. You expose a frame of the film at a time. And we all in college had these standardized desks. You know, everybody has the same desks and drawers and closets and stuff. And our desks had a cork board front, like on the back, you know, to like stick up notes and stuff. So what I did is I drew out a little scenario where an asteroid is coming towards Earth. And I drew this stuff all on 2D paper, and then I took pins and I moved the pins. I stuck the objects on the corkboard and moved the objects around in a very simplistic fashion that made it look like they see the asteroid, they shoot up rockets like nukes to try to destroy the asteroid, and it doesn't work. And at the end, the asteroid just blows up the Earth at the end in a very simple, about a minute long video. It was, but it was all shot on film, and it proved to me, I was like, wow, you know, this is simplistic technology, but it works. It's great. I loved it.
Well, it sounds like my favorite show, You, Me, and the Apocalypse, which has been canceled, sadly, but I mean, it's just like, they might have copied you. You might have some rights there.
That's okay. Okay. Everybody copies everybody in the entertainment business, right? It's nuts.
Yeah.
I know.
Have you posted that video online?
There's a clip of it in an interview video I've made. It was like an interview I did for Red versus Blue UK. They had some sort of event out there, and they asked me to do an interview for them. And in that video, there's me talking about it, and there's a clip. There's most of it.
I think I remember watching that then. Okay, cool. Yeah, you're one of the few people that actually have, that I know of that's shot stop motion with film. That's pretty cool.
It was fun. I wish I could do it again. I have so much respect and admiration for the old school analog way of doing things. That's my thing, man. I love analog technology. I love doing like the pre-digital realm, you know, it's cumbersome, and believe I love to use the computer. Don't get me wrong. I love my digital camera and my computer, but if possible, I try to use the older ways of doing things because I believe it's more visceral and real and gritty, and you get more out of it, you know?
True.
Yeah. I don't know if I could do a film camera without having a loop last frame or onion skinning. That'd be difficult.
Oh, man. I got a story. Well, I'll tell you more about it later. I've got my whole battle of the film was shot with a subpar program. So I did not have any of that. I had to take frames out of the folder and like manually thumb through them and figure out the animation. It was terrible. It was,
wow.
I was doing that on a very old Mac. So it practically was, you know, film. Okay. It practically was doing it blind.
We'll segue into, was it Brick Built for Combat? That was the
yeah.
Zanzibar?
I called it Battle of the Brick Built for Combat.
Wow, yep. Wow. That was probably one of the most impressive mocks I think I've ever seen, and to be able to film on that would be just incredible.
Thank you. That project, it's hard for me to think about it because it was such a long time in the making, and it was born out of just a almost a school obsession with video games and stuff. And I had a vision of something I wanted to create from the very first time I saw the Halo 2, you know, like E3 announcement trailers. You know, I was so pumped for that franchise. I was such a big fan of the first one. And then Halo 2 comes out and I said, I know I can do this. And I just wanted to make a map. You know, I wanted to make the mock. And then I kept making it, and it kept getting bigger and more accurate. And I was like, wow, you know what? I should film a movie with this. And I didn't even know where I was going with it. And I just sort of did it over the course of 6 years. And wow. And it became – I'm extremely proud of that film. I love it.
It's one of my favorite Brick films. It's really awesome.
Yeah, that's passion in a film. Absolutely.
Is there any of that mock left?
There's one piece of that mock left. Well, there's the vehicles – and the little figures, and there's one piece to the mock left. It's the little sniper tower where it says Camp Froman. Mm-hmm. To the left of that. I don't know if you know the map so well, but if you're looking at the fan on the beachhead, it would be on the left. And it's got like two ramps going up the side, and there's a little flat platform. In the game, that's where you would find the sniper rifle.
Yeah, I've
so
been. My stepson
like
killed me there a lot.
I made. I kept. What?
My stepson killed me there a lot.
Right, exactly. That was the thing, you know. I saw this big model in front of me. I was like, oh my goodness. It's like, what have I done? Because I could move around it and look at it. And I was like, wow, you know, like I'm trying to get all the angles right. And as it looks in the game, and I have the TV on in the corner, and I'm looking around the game, walking around with the character. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I did it. It looks just like it. I can't believe it. So it was, I don't know. I surprised myself with the quality of that mock. So
it took
I was
you,
very happy with it.
It took you 6 years to make the video. How long did it take to make the mock?
I think over the course of 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
Because I started with what bricks I had, and then I realized, wow, I'm going to need more. I had to cannibalize other models and other bricks and stuff. And then I said, wow, I need even more. And then I had to order a few, you know, actually buy a few. And then there was a thing where I had to try, I had built the model initially on like these foam blocks on a pool table. And I realized, wow, this is not going to cut it. We need a bigger table or a bigger piece of plywood. So I had to totally redo it. And cut a hole in the plywood so that the fan could sink down, and so over course of 2 or 3 years, that's what it was. And then once it was done, then I decided to start making the movie.
Okay.
Now, did your brother help you with that at all, or was this all you?
he helped me with different things of that. Although I was more in charge of this one. He helped me more later on with my later projects.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure he looked at me and was like, man, he's crazy.
How did you get the nickname Coobers?
Oh, man. That nickname has stuck with me since seventh grade. I remember vividly, we were in our little classroom, only like 16 or 17 of us kids, and we were bored as heck, right? And I think it was raining, so we had like indoor recess or something, so we're all messing around in the room. And someone was in the back, and we had three or four really old compact computers on the back that you didn't even want to use them. They were terrible. And we were popping the keys out of the keyboard and rearranging the keys to spell stupid stuff. So somehow someone spelled my name, and I added an O, or someone added an O, and it eventually became Coober. And then I remember everybody left, and I kept looking at it on the keyboard like it was some like moment of amazement or something. I was like, you know, Coober. And then because my last name is Cobbs, and that got written first, and then we were kept moving the letters around. And I remember distinctly, you know what? What if I add a Z? And I popped the Z out of there. I don't know why, but I popped it in there, and I was like, Coobers, I kind of like that. And it stuck, and then all the kids kept calling me that, and that shortens to Coob.
Different version.
Whoop, it's 9:30. And people kept, you know, calling me Coobs and Coobers in the hallways and stuff, and it stuck with me up to this point, and it's weird. Nothing wrong with it. I embraced it.
I like it. Now, your Facebook shows an alternate, like, foreign name.
Which we are not going to try to pronounce.
Go ahead and pronounce it.
It's my Ukrainian-Russian name.
Ukrainian, okay.
And how do you pronounce it?
Right. I think it's Alex Kebzarev. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. Kebzarev was the original last name. And then I believe my grandfather or great-grandfather changed it to Cobbs to make it simpler to, you know, spell and to say. And that's where it comes from. And it's Kobzarev. And I remember because I was searching back for it in Wikipedia. And Wikipedia says that a Kobzar is a type of mandolin that they play in Ukraine. And that a whole bunch of people were called Kobzars because they were like traveling, almost like traveling musicians or keepers of the tales or something like that. And you can look it up on Wikipedia, Kobzar. And an interesting thing is that a lot of them were blind or had visual problems. So they would take up music, and this became their way of life, as I understand it. I may be wrong. I'm paraphrasing Wikipedia here. But the weird thing is, my brother, whom I love very much, is legally blind. So there might be some of that gene pool, that gene came all the way down the line. So it's bizarre.
And does he play the mandolin?
No, but I told him if he did, we'd have to go travel to Ukraine and check it out.
So I take it it was your...
I know there's a Kobzar museum, or part of one, and I'd love to check that out one day. That'd be cool.
So it was your grandparents that immigrated?
I'm not sure exactly. It might be my great-grandparents.
Okay, so I take it you don't know any Russian or Ukrainian.
No. not like recently.
So where were you born?
I'm from Stamford, Connecticut.
Okay, see, that's my fellow Yankee. I'm from Connecticut as well.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
You got out?
I did, yeah. it wasn't my choice. My mom just was tired of the cold weather and wanted to come down south. But no, I miss it. I love the cold weather. I love the four seasons, and I loved everything about it.
Cold weather. This is nothing. We had snow just on Monday, and it disappeared by the end of the day. It was this isn't cold weather anymore. I'm ready to go up to Vermont and like live in state Vermont or the tundra or something. That's cold.
Yeah, I'm ready to go to Scotland or Alaska or Canada. I want it real cold.
Yeah, right on, me too. Because you can always get warmer. You can always put on more layers.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
You can't do that in the heat. You have to crank the air conditioning or jump in a pool or something.
And you have to hide inside because it's too hot to do anything out. Yeah, no, this is our life. It's too hot here most of the time. So, yeah.
Where are you guys?
In Atlanta. Or Hotlanta, as I call it.
Okay, all right. All right. That's cool. Oh, one day. I'll visit the South one day. It'll be cool. The farthest I've gone south is like Florida once, you know, when I went to Disney World in fifth grade. And then recently, Brick Fair, Virginia last year.
Oh,
and,
cool.
It wasn't that cold that year, but it was fun.
Yeah. So one of the coolest things in brick filming moments that I can remember is the 15th Annual Interactive Achievement Awards. You did an intro for that. Is that correct?
I did. And that was after the Battle of the Brick. That would be like my first slash best, I think, highest thing I ever reached ever. It was an amazing experience. I received a email from the president of the organization, the Interactive Achievement Awards. It's called DICE Conference is
DICE.
What it's called.
But, mm-hmm.
Yeah, DICE. They asked me, they somehow saw my stuff, my work, and asked if I'd be interested. And so for 3 months, I worked on a 2-minute video the idea was to highlight about 15 different titles of video games that were being, you know, that were presented that year, that were being featured that year, and just make a cool, fun intro for the show. And it was amazing. I couldn't believe it. And the coolest thing was that they flew me out to the conference when it was done, and I got to spend 3 or 4 days in Las Vegas. And it was truly like almost another worldly experience. It was amazing. It was really great. I got to go to, they played the video, you know, their presenter made fun of me a little bit.
That yeah, Jay Moore. And, I mean, how awesome is that?
Did you get to meet him up close and in person or just when he?
I did not meet him. I saw him on his way into the conference as he was sitting there looking at his notes, I'm sure reviewing his jokes and going into the conference. But now I got to sit down with other fantastic people. One of them was, I'm blanking on his name. He is the president over there at Game and Tycho. You know, what's their comic? Why am I blanking on this? It's only 9:30 in the morning. I haven't had my coffee.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we need more coffee.
I need more coffee.
Let me get my assistant to send some more coffee to you.
The Gabe and Tycho, the comic that the guys make, Jerry and what's it called? Oh, I feel
stupid. Yeah, we're
no help here. I only know a couple of comics, DC
either.
And Marvel. So
no, they've got their online web comic is extremely popular, and I read it all the time.
Okay,
and I'm just.
You'll think of it in 15 minutes. Just blurt it out.
I will. Well, they sat me down with him and people that worked on, I think, the development side of the Lego video games and a couple other great people there at the event, and we just chit-chatted. It was wonderful. It was great.
That's
and
cool.
then during the meeting process of the whole, because this is a convention with all of my heroes, you know, everybody important in the video game world is there. My thing, my stop motion animation Lego thing is opening the show, and it was just great. The real fun of it came from meeting those individuals behind the scenes. David Jaffe, you got to meet David Jaffe, the creator of so many games. God of War.
Mm.
That was a fun story. That was a fun story. I sat next to him, and we just started playing Atari. And I didn't know who he was until we just started talking. I was like, no way. He made God of War. And then we're playing this old Atari dungeon game. He's like, you know, this was the creation for God of War. This was the inspiration. And I'm just, it was great. It was so much fun.
Totally mm-hmm. a surreal
and,
moment for
and
sure.
Speaking of the video you made, did you have a favorite section or part of that intro that you liked the most?
Mm. I wish I could have done more with the ending. The ending has two groups of army guys, one to represent Battlefield 3 mm-hmm. at the time, and one to represent Call of Duty 3, I believe, at the time. And I made this elaborate set that looked like it was from Battlefield. It had a train yard and a crane and all this stuff. And I just wanted to make a more elaborate animation with that. So that was my favorite part. I wanted to keep going, but I never did. It was just like, make those few seconds of scene and then end it, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was. I really liked that video also, and then the whole JMR part was funny but awesome at the same time.
Thank you. It was a great time.
Yeah. Cool.
I hope I represented brick filming.
Oh, you did. Absolutely did.
You did.
That is such a proud moment. Yeah.
So are you? I was, go ahead.
Oh, I was. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that. To me, it's still unbelievable. It's like, wow, they got me to do this thing out of Lego. We did it, and it happened, and it was great.
Very cool. So, are you partnered on YouTube?
Partnered? What do you mean? In what way?
Are you partnered with like Machinima or?
Yeah. I've been a Machinima director, a part of the Machinima Directors Program for several years. That is pretty much where I stand. But I'm just concentrating on making content, you know, content and animation, and you know, like YouTube has changed over the years.
That's
you guys
sure.
know that
absolutely.
It's definitely changed. You know, whereas in the old days you could make a video that was about 2 minutes long or even longer, and it was really good, and you could put it out there and you'd get like a million hits. It was amazing. But now you do that and you get swamped over by all these people making unboxing videos and, oh, look, I put the camera on me for 12-hour videos. You know, it's nuts. The market has become saturated with subpar content, and then the really good content is struggling to float to the top. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about that yesterday, seeing some video that had so many hits. It's like, and it was not good at all. It's like, how does that even happen? And YouTube, you know, it used to be the subscribers really made a huge difference because the videos you uploaded got released to all of those people. So you, everyone that was subscribed, you got to see your new video, but it just doesn't work that way anymore. So it doesn't matter how many subscribers you have, they don't actually send it out to all of those people. You know, people are relying on social media now to get their work out there. It's totally different.
It is.
Are you working on any projects right now?
Oh yeah. I'm always working on projects. But it's been difficult because what happened is I took on a couple contract jobs, you know, and I made a little bit of money. And the problem is that money just disappears because you're trying to live while making something of quality that takes a very long time in itself to make. Right. So as you work on the project, the money slowly disappears. You got to pay bills and stuff. So I found it unsustainable. And so right now I work at a toy store, and I sell Lego and other toys for right now. And that's how I make, you know, my paycheck. And right now I am doing lots and lots of writing and preliminary work and storyboarding and just the idea process behind multiple projects that I would like to see come to fruition. Because I want to move beyond just the Lego aspect of using film. Lego to me is just a medium. It's my favorite medium. I love it. But it's still a trademarked, copyrighted brand. You know, that's the problem with it. You try to make stuff with these characters and these bricks, and Lego is a company that you know how they behave. They want to control their product. They want to protect it,
right?
Basically. So what I would like to do is move on to some other form of medium that I can own and is completely original, and I can trademark and do something with, like maybe like 3D printing, although that's very expensive. It's come down in a lot of years and continues to come down like daily. So that's the kind of those are the kind of projects I'm thinking about and moving on. But that's not to say that I'm not going to make Lego films anymore. I love making brick films. They're a lot of fun.
Are you still working on a Superman Batman brick film?
It's funny you mentioned that.
She had some awesome shots.
Thank you. Thank you. That project ended up being rushed to finish, and it's literally sitting on my hard drive in parts unfinished. The set was amazing and everything. I finished the film. It just has to be put back together. That's all. Because after that project, I took on I did a Halo Mega Bloks project for Mega Brands, and that became the top priority. So I do have unfinished films out there that are waiting for release, and people keep asking me on YouTube and different social media, where are they? Where are those films? I guarantee you they will see those films one day soon. I'm just trying to figure out a bunch of other things in my life and on media and everything, and how it's all going to work and what I'm going to do, how I'm going to move forward, you know, because I kind of took a hiatus from YouTube recently. I haven't posted a video since October 31st, and it wasn't even Lego related. So, but I think it's been a good thing to step away from the constant updating, constant nuttiness of the online world and take a step back and say, you know, like, what do I want to make? What do I want to create? How do I want to go forward with doing something? And so, you know, everybody will get a chance to see Superman versus Batman. It'll be fun.
How about the Pacific Rim?
That is part of one of those projects. That's there. That's part of one of those projects that's sort of like in the tank, sort of ready to go out. I think I'd like to do audio tweaks to that video, but it is for the most part ready.
Oh, cool.
And I just have to figure out what's going to happen with it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In 2012, I guess PBS did some feature that you were in. Is that correct? The Art of the Lego?
Yes, that was very cool. Yeah, they featured Sean Kennedy, me, and Nathan Sawaya in a short little piece about Lego art. And everybody had their own specific things. The other two do more like models and things. And then I was the only one in the group that did like animation. And at the time I was talking more about I think Call of Duty and Gears of War, my Gears of War film, Bricks of War. And that was it. It was great. They came over here to my place and set up a little, you know, studio shot, and we did an interview, and then I showed them how I was animating and what do I do. And it was great. I had a great talk with the camera guy about what lenses he uses, because he's using the same camera I did.
Cool.
Wow, that
cool.
Is cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was awesome. That came out of the blue. They just emailed me. I was like, wow, is this...
Yeah, it was a really cool feature. Yeah.
It's been a great piece for me to put on my LinkedIn and my resume and say, like, hey, look who I am. Like, here it
absolutely.
Is. Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me.
Are any of your Brick Films team efforts, anybody assist with certain aspects of your films beyond voice acting?
Not most of them. The last big one I did, for Mega Brands, it was a two-parter, Halo Battle for New Mombasa, Part 1, 2. That project had a deadline, and I was struggling to figure out how I was going to do this, because the project I had envisioned was very elaborate, and I had a ton of Mega Bloks product to figure and sort through, and I had to build buildings from scratch and do all this stuff. So I sort of like did a Tom Sawyer thing where I'm like, yeah, come on over, it'll be fun, we'll hang out, build together. And it turned into days and days of slogging there, just building away, hammering at the little pieces with a hammer to make sure they stick together. And so that project ended up being a collaborative effort. But most of my projects are it's just me here alone in the dark animating away. And that's the way I like it. You know, it's the way I prefer to be. If I could do everything myself, I probably would. But as I get more advanced, and hopefully one day if I can create a studio or some sort of space where I can truly collaborate with other people, I hope to collaborate with people. It'd be fun, see what else we can bring to the table and make productions bigger and make animation the way I move through this life. That's what I'd like to do.
Very cool.
So where do you typically animate or brick film?
What?
Where do you typically do your brick films? Where do you create them?
Well, I still live at home. I still live at home here in Connecticut. And I was lucky enough to have this large room that I grew up in. And the room is sort of separate from the rest of the house. So it's like sits over the garage. I'm sort of separated from the rest of the house. And as a kid, I mean, all of the imagination of a child grew up here, right? And as a kid, my I was so into trains. Like I said before, I had an HO scale model railroad. And instead of building a baseboard for model railroad from, you know, like plywood and you get 2x4s and support them like you would do, instead we got a ping pong table, and that had the train set on it for years. And so not too long ago, I don't even remember exactly when, but I decided to take the train set down, consolidated. I kept what I had and threw away some of the stuff. And I do all of my work on a ping pong table. And right now I have a project set up where half the table is folded up, and I have blue cardboard paper plastered to it as the background. And then on the flat part, that's where like part of the set is. And I love doing stuff on a ping pong table because you have so much just raw table space that it's just sort of like a blank canvas. You can create on it. It's like a large desktop computer, sort of. That's how I describe it, because you have so much room to move things and interact with things, and you can animate over here, and you can be doing something over on the other side of the table. As long as you don't bump the table or move it.
I was going to say that they seem a little bit wobbly.
I've supported it. I've gone to great lengths to support it, but I've never had a problem. It works great for me.
Cool. Well, let's do a little geek talk here then. What hardware and software are you using? I guess starting with the computer or whatnot.
Oh, so it took me a long time to get to this point of having my computer be the computer that I want it to be. But I think it paid off. I love this computer. I'm going to read it to you. I've got a MacBook Pro 15-inch, late 2013. It's got a 2.6 gigahertz Intel Core i7 processor and 16 gigs of 1600 megahertz DDR3 RAM. And the graphics is a separate graphics card. It's an NVIDIA GeForce GT750M 2048 megabytes graphics card. And so what it means is this computer that I'm using is zooped up. I've got flash. I've got a gig of flash memory, and I store all of my render files on a separate 500 gig flash memory as well. And then I have another like 2 terabyte hard drive that's like a backup hard drive to do Time Machine in case the computer ever crashes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I use for the computer, but it's all portable. So the laptop and the hard drive, you can just pick it up, and I can go anywhere around the model and use it, which is why I went for it. Because before, I had done all of the Battle of the Brick and everything else on a old desktop iMac. That was wonderful for the time, but it just couldn't cut it anymore. And I had to sell old components to try to make up the money to afford this. So this computer is just excellent and fast, and I can do everything super-duper fast. My camera is a Canon 6D. I still have a Canon 5D Mark II camera, but probably the worst thing that could happen to an animator happened. The tripod fell over.
Oh.
And yeah, it was bad. And the plug, the camera's fine, but the plug, the USB cord that was attached to the side of the camera hit the ground first, and it damaged the USB port into the camera. And the whole point of getting that camera was to hook it up to the computer with the USB so that you can get live view. That's the whole point. So you can do onion skinning and you can see what the camera is seeing on the computer so that you can maneuver it better. So when that happened, it just put the halts on all my projects because I was like, wow.
I remember when that happened. You
heartbreaking.
Heartbroken and devastated about that.
It's not heartbreaking. It's just,
when that happens to you. I mean, you know how much work you put into these things, and to have that kind of taken away from you is like, ah.
I know. It was frustrating for sure, but I refused to give in to this, like, you know, like, I hate saying, like, I catch myself when I say, like, oh, man, I love my camera. Oh, man, I love my computer. Like, I don't. These things don't love you back. You know, it's just, to me, it's just like, they're tools. They work for me. That's the thing. I firmly put the technology under my boot, and I will make it work for me. So and then it's frustrating because I had to call Canon, and Canon's like, well, that port is literally part of the motherboard of that camera, and in order to replace the port, you must replace. Which is going to cost over $1,000.
Wow.
I said, great, that's wonderful. And then they said, well, how old is the camera? I think like 2-3 years. And they said, well, you might just be better off buying a new camera.
Yeah.
That's for cheaper, and you get a brand new camera. So that's what I did. And I used the 5D Mark II to do other photography and live events and different things I do. So it's great. It was actually, I wouldn't say blessing in disguise, but it's a... It wasn't a total loss, is what I'm saying. It wasn't devastating where I couldn't do anything.
Well, like I said, using that's better than using like an iPhone for recording video, like at a Lego conference or whatnot. So that's still
hey,
has its use.
You can use, man. These cameras are amazing. These cameras on the iPhones are fantastic. I think you come a long way from little Logitech camera.
That's true.
You know,
well, a lot of this stuff that's for the iTouch and the iPhone, the Lego software for stop motion is better than what I was using at the beginning. So,
right.
Definitely. So, yeah. What editing and frame capture software are you using?
All right. Yeah. So I'm using is my go-to stop motion animation program. I love DragonFrame. I don't see how I can ever go back from DragonFrame because it's just so perfect. You have so much more to the program that I don't even know about or can't even use, you know, for like motion control rigs and all kinds of crazy lighting effects and stuff. I don't know how to use any of that really yet. I just work with the basic camera input system. I can manipulate frames and do that, and I love it. And then I export the image sequences or the videos, and I put them through Adobe Premiere and Adobe After Effects.
Okay.
And those are my two big programs. I'm using the Creative Cloud subscription to have those programs. And I go through them and just do all the manipulation in After Effects and then put them back into Premiere Pro. And I do all the color correction in there as well. And it works great.
Awesome.
I love these programs.
What kind of lighting do you have?
See, I did it. I did it right there. I said I love these programs. See?
It's relative.
I know, but I hate it. I hate using that word like that.
I wouldn't want to go back and stop using DragonFrame now. It would be difficult. Once you've got a taste of some better software, it's hard to use inferior product.
I agree.
Cool. So what kind of lights do you have?
Lights. I'm using, man, I wouldn't even know what exactly they're called. I know I'm using both 90 watt and I think 60 watt LED lights that I just bought at the hardware store. And I bought them because I didn't have a lot of money at the time, but I needed LED lights. And after years of using halogen lights, like 500 watt halogen lights, it was terrible. So instead of doing that, I sprung for six LED lights that I got at the hardware store, and they say they output 60 and 90 watts, but they only take in about 9 to 17 watts of energy. So they're extremely cool to the touch. They don't get hot. And I love them. And I can do all kinds of bouncing things. Like I bounce them off the ceiling and create a soft light. Or I use tissue paper or paper towels or whatever I can find to give them lenses. That's for the like outdoor scenes and stuff. But what I really love to do is take small LED lights that I buy at a hobby store for like train model sets. And I love to wire up a big configuration of lights. And sometimes I just hook them up to my old model train transformer. And when I turn on the transformer, all of the lights go on and I have the equivalent of on-set lighting.
Like practical, which is really awesome, yeah.
Really interesting. So I switch back and forth between, but you know, that's one of the areas that I could totally use. I should probably read a couple more books on is lighting, because that's what makes everything look good. And quite frankly, I mean, I think I have room for improvement there. So I've got to work on that.
Yeah, so do I. You have any special backdrops besides just kind of the sky blue backdrops?
Not really. But that, again, that's another area I think that could be improved. I'd like to do something where I could hand paint, you know, like hand painted backdrops. Going back to the Thomas the Tank Engine thing again, they would use for all their staged models, they use large, slightly curved painted backdrops. And they look like artistically done. They're great. And they had different ones for the different scenes, you know, like daytime, nighttime, spooky, scary, cloudy sky, you know, whatever. And I'd like to do something like that. And because I really don't like just putting up a blue backdrop. It's 10 o'clock. I really don't like doing a backdrop where you have to replace it in the computer with blue screen or green screen.
Neither do I
like to do that. The more you can actually photograph it in the camera, the better. So I'd like to move on to something like that where I have actual physical backdrops that I can manipulate.
Cool. What about your audio recording?
Well, the audio, I mean, there's almost no audio recording done until the post-production process, but I have a separate microphone. I'm not even sure what it's called. I can get it. Hang on.
That's
a
second.
Right here. Now I want to know. I just forgot what it's called. This is the I bought it at the Apple store. It's a blue microphone. You might have seen it. It's a simple four-way microphone that you can change the different patterns of the microphone to and the gain, you know, to what you're using, and then it just plugs right in with USB. And I've been using this for at least the voiceovers, which have not been very prevalent, but I can still use it. And I can use it for podcasts or whatever I need to.
Okay.
In fact, I probably should have been using it for this. And I forgot what it's called, but it just says blue on it.
Okay.
And I bought it at the Apple store.
Okay.
The nerds out there can figure it out.
Do you have any kind of special tools, I guess, which you say would be in your brick filming toolbox besides, you know, like toothpicks and whatnot? Any special things that you use to help you make your film?
I do, and I've got it right here. I'm holding it in my hands. It's very personal, actually. My Uncle Al, he had the same first name. And his last name, his first name begins with a K as well. And so his initials are AK, like mine. And he used to work on, he was a tinkerer. He used to use, he worked for CBS radio and broadcasting. And when he retired, he ended up doing a lot of woodwork in his basement. And he had a whole workshop down there of woodworking tools and screwdrivers and all kinds of different stuff. And he passed away some years ago, and one of the tools that I have left over is this simple screwdriver. It's not a Phillips, it's a flathead screwdriver, but he carved his initials into it, AK. And I've got this thing here in my hands, and I swear to you, it comes in handy almost every single time I'm working on a project, because The flathead part of the screwdriver is so thin and perfect that I can pop Lego out if I need to, or I can just maneuver some piece of clay or something. It's got a thin handle. It's just like the perfect tool. And so when I hold this thing, I know that he was using this thing to make his creations. And it's really personal to me because, like, wow, you know, like, he's gone, but here I am using the same tool. I'm going to try to use this same tool, you know, as long as possible. It's silly. It's just a screwdriver. You can get a screwdriver anywhere. But the fact that this was his and really makes a difference to me.
Yeah, and that's special. That's very special.
That's a very special. I hold on to it. And I didn't even realize how special it was to me until I started using it. And I realized kind of over time what it was and how great it was. So it's special to me.
Very cool. Very cool. Anything else in the
toolbox?
Toolbox.
You know, most things I use, I just sort of build from scratch out of the Lego. If I need a rig, I'll build it from scratch. If I need something that'll move forward or backward or pan left or right, I do it. I had built I still have it. It's from Battle of the Brick, a slow moving gear dolly system. It's basically the same gear train as, and this is very specific, the first round of Lego Mindstorms sets had a Mars set. And in the Mars set, you could build a rover that would, you know, when you put the motors on and you went go, it would have a very slow gear train where the right side would move very slow and the left side would move very slow, or you can move them back and forward together. And so I took that design and I just widened it. And so you can place a camera on the inside in the middle of these wheels. And that's how I've been doing my panning shots since, like, Battle of the Brick, is with this little Lego dolly, basically. And it's a manual dolly, so I turn the gear. I have the gears marked, so if I turn the gear one or two rotations, it will set there. And because we're using a worm gear, it's very, very specific. You move it to, you know that the camera has moved to, and it does some pretty fantastic dolly work.
That's awesome.
Just for what it was. Yeah, I'd say that thing too. And then even for I still have it for the Batman Superman thing that I made. It's sort of like a seesaw. Just picture a seesaw made out of Lego Technic bricks, and one side is weighted and the other side is meant to, like, clasp the camera onto it, and I probably use tape and anything I can to secure it, and clay and all kinds of stuff. But once it's secure and you put weight on the other end, it allows the camera to do, like, a simplistic crane shot. So you can pan the camera up or tilt it down at the same time, and I can do crane shots with it. So there's no limit to what you can build out of the bricks. It's pretty
very cool.
Huh. You're very creative, yeah. And that helps.
What how many frames a second do you typically shoot?
I used to do 15 frames per second, but now I do 24 frames per second, except I shoot on doubles. So it means I'm really only shooting 12 movements per second, but every movement is counted twice in Dragon Frame. I just have it set to, shoot doubles. So you take one picture, the computer counts it as two. And so that, over time, it looks really good. And I read about, what's the difference, what's more preferable. And they say that, you know, like Wallace and Gromit is shot on doubles, on twos like that. So I'm like, hey, that's good for that. Great, this works for me. Well, I'll stick with that. So I just want to perfect how that looks on screen.
And there's a lot of folks that just really like that 24 frame per second feel compared to, you know, the 15. It gives a very cinematic feel, I believe.
Yeah, if you can move the movement slow enough to make it work, yeah, it looks great.
Any of your fast scenes, do you ever shoot full 24 frame, like a vehicle?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I'll switch up the frame rate a lot all the time, but that's like on a case by case basis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Have you met any brick filmers in person?
A lot at Brick Fair Virginia and Brick Fair New Jersey. Those were really fun events to go to because everybody swarmed me. I had people like little kids and adults who recognized me from YouTube, and they swarmed me asking me questions and stuff, and they're talking about their Brick films, and that was a great experience. Yeah, so I've met a lot of them, and there's so much more to this community that I don't believe I've tapped into. I've kind of been working sort of like a hermit away from everybody, you know? And I desperately do want to get more involved in the community. And I believe in the future I will be. I'll be more involved. I want to be more open about what I'm doing and everything. But and keep people updated on my projects and what I'm doing instead of having people, you know, constantly emailing me, asking me what I'm doing with my projects. But I haven't gotten to a point, both personally and like professionally, where I'm ready to do that yet. So it's soon. It's on the horizon. It's close by. But, you know, a lot of it just has to do with just making a living. You know, is this the way I'm going to be making my living, or am I going to have to do something else while I work on a personal project? You know, I'd really love to make a film and enter it in a film festival. And that's going to take a lot of time, a lot of years. I told you I'm doing pre-production work on that. So I hope to connect more with the brick filming community and the Lego / filmmaking community at large. It'll be fun.
Cool. Do you compose any music for your brick films?
No, I don't. I wish I knew music, and I'd like to learn the piano. But I don't compose anything. And in fact, that's been one of the worst hang-ups for me, is like finding music that is legal to use. You know, like all the free stuff out there is pretty much the same thing. And if it's free, other people can use it. And it's been rehashed over and over again. I used a song from Kevin MacLeod in one of my videos or whatever, and all the comments are just like, oh, that's Sky Minecraft's theme. That's Sky Minecraft's theme. I'm like, well, obviously this guy is way more important than I am because they keep referencing it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is like, if you have a free piece of music and it gets used by how many people, that's what happens, as long as you pay attribution to it.
Exactly. Now Kevin's music is very popular. I mean, it's everywhere, not just with brick filmers, but
you just got to use that new stuff that he comes out with. And
well, then you have the Machinima library of music, and even YouTube now has free music you can use as well. So at least it's getting more
available. Yeah, but I'd really like to create custom stuff that's really made for the project, you know, like from beginning to end, you know, like you can't, a John Williams piece is made for Star Wars or any of the other movies he's made, but it's made for those particular scenes and those particular emotional moments and pieces. And that's kind of how I want to up my game. I want to up the believability of my animations in both, you know, movement wise and emotions too. I really want to get emotions in there, and then I want that to be complemented by really great original music. That would be fun.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Music definitely makes a huge impact on a video and a movie.
Do you listen to any music, podcast, or watch TV in the background while you're animating?
Sometimes, although all of the good animation books I've read, especially the one by Richard Williams, the animation director from Framed Roger Rabbit. His book early on in the book has it's called The Animator's Survival Guide. And early on in the book, he describes an encounter he had where he asked one of the older gentlemen, one of the like greats of animation, that same question, you know, and he drew like a 2 or 3 pages. Full drawing of the guy getting very angry and getting ridiculously huge and just screaming like of all the stupid, ridiculous questions, I don't have enough time to, I'm not smart enough to think about that many things at once. And then he says in the book that from that moment on, he learned to animate in silence and concentrate. And he said miraculously, wow, all my animation got better. So I try to really listen to that. I remember that all the time, and I try to focus on that. But sometimes, you know, I'll still put music on or whatever. I like, I really like self-help, self-development podcasts, because we're talking about, you know, building a career and networking and figuring out your life, life hacking, anything, anything to improve anything is where my mind's at. If it can be improved, then be all you can be, like, do that. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish. So by listening to really good podcasts about those sort of topics, whether it be personal, emotional, physical, all of that stuff, I'm into it. And that's what I like to listen to. I also listen to BBC News, the live news, incessantly, too, to get a scope on what's going on in the world.
Very cool. Very cool. I listen to a little NPR.
I like NPR, too. Yeah.
Do you, let's see, do you have a favorite brick film that you have created?
I have created. If I got hit by a bus tomorrow, I would hope that they played Battle of the Brick at my funeral. You know, but because that one, I had such a vision for that, and I loved it so much. The point is, though, it's not based on my own original property. You know, it's Halo. It's owned by Microsoft and 343. My favorite brick film. You know, it might be some of my earliest brick films that the public hasn't really seen, because I have a lot that are still on old hard drives that I haven't really seen. I'll tell you what I did. You know how this began? Even before Battle of the Brick, I attempted to recreate the entire Return of the Jedi movie in just as the Star Wars Lego was coming out. And so I think I got 42 minutes through of shot for shot, scene for scene, of Return of the Jedi, of the droids entering Jabba's palace, all the way up until they get captured by, and I did the whole movie with that Logitech camera and terrible animation all the way through, and I had the audio recorded directly on a cassette off of the VHS, so it's terrible. But those movies, some of the scenes, I go back and I look and I'm like, I can't believe I was doing this when I was 12 or 13, especially the speeder chase. I figured out all kinds of interesting ways to do the speeder chase. And one day I want to put that out there and show people. But the problem is it's got Star Wars audio in it, and you can't just rip from the movie. So that doesn't really work, putting that online. Otherwise, it just either gets taken down or the music gets erased. And exactly. It's stupid. Why bother?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So maybe some of those early movies. There's a Lost Cooper's film. There's a Lost Cooper's film of the Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Jango Fett fight from Attack of the Clones. I did that scene shot for shot, and I have no idea what happened to that movie. I think it got deleted off an old hard drive by accident or something, but it's gone.
Aww.
It's gone. Maybe that's my favorite one, that one.
There you go. The Lost one.
The one that no one will ever see.
Are you still doing anything with Megablocks?
Not right now. Not currently. After after my two-part project and the production, I sort of wrapped up production and put everything away in storage. However, I was very impressed with those figures from Megablocks line. And in fact, even in the toy store that I work, we just got a bunch of Ninja Turtles figures out, and they're of the same articulation. They have ball and socket joints, and they're better than some like G.I. Joes. I can't believe it. The Halo, the new Halo Megablocks figures and the Ninja Turtles and all those new figures have so much articulation and are so good for creating emotions and getting little quips out to emote with characters from animation standpoint. I think that was my favorite part of that project. But I'm not working on anything right now with Megablocks. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely dig their figures. They're really cool.
Yeah, they did a great job with those lines. They've come a long way, that's for sure.
That is true. That is true.
So do you happen to have any brick filming tips you'd like to share?
Tips. Let's see. There's so many tips you could give. You know what? I want to say it's not really a brick filming tip, but I would tell the kids out there, if they're listening, or anybody out there who's listening, to read, and I would strongly encourage them to read books about animation, because in this world of, you know, instant gratification and I want it just now and I want to just do it, you know, you miss a lot of the subtleties that have been written down in books. And the more books I read, and I don't even really like that much, because it's just like, you know, when I start, it's just like, well, I'm started, got to finish, you know, it's got to go all the way to the end of the book now. Because I'm a slow reader, so it takes me a little bit longer, because I want to absorb every single thing I'm reading and really take it in, instead of just skimming it and just ignoring the finer points. But some of the animation books I read, you just get so much out of them. And there's so many great lessons, like that one I was talking before by Richard Williams. There's so many great little lessons in there. And if you actually listen to them and apply them to your own projects, you can, you know, that knowledge is passed down over time and it becomes really great. That's the thing I learned, because the finer points of maybe like 2D animation can completely be transferred to 3D or stop motion animation, and it's all sort of the same vein. It's all can be applied. So those lessons that are written down in books, because I see so many people not reading, or we switch to audiobooks so easily, you know, that it becomes, I just think your brain literally absorbs the information better when you're reading it. And that's been a focus for me.
That's great.
Yeah, that is a great tip. Reading is always recommended.
Right. Thing, because we're not doing it anymore, you know, we're all on our phones and we're on Facebook and it's crazy.
Well, we're kind of getting close to the end here, so I'm going to go way off topic here and just ask a question, because I believe you're a science and space buff. Is that kind of correct?
I am. I love science and space, and actually one day I hope to make entertainment that promotes that type of stuff. Yes, I love science and space.
So an off-the-wall question here. What do you find more fascinating, a permanent moon base or a mission to Mars?
A moon base.
Me too. I agree. Me too.
Moon
okay,
base.
Cool.
You know why? Because it's practical.
Yeah.
A mission to Mars is so much more expensive and so much more harrowing. It's sort of like skipping a step. You know, it's like, it would be good for America. They say we're doing it. We're doing it, like, by 2030. I think the long-term goal plans are to do it, just to prove that we can do it in technology and plant the flag there. You got to do it. But and that's a big PR move. That's a big scientific leap. But in terms of practicality, you need a station, a midway point in between. You know, and this has been shown in all the movies since, you know, 2001, A Space Odyssey, where you have like a space station orbiting Earth, and then you would go to the moon base. And a moon base, you could, is like a permanent satellite, and it's huge. Mm-hmm. And the top layer of the dust is a type of hydrogen. Hydrogen 3, I think. It's like you could use it to do stuff. And then they wanted to use like advanced 3D printing all of the structures and stuff on the moon base. It sounds ridiculous, but it's not. It's really, it's more feasible than I think we believe.
Well,
once that gets established, then I think that will truly open up space to Earth.
Totally,
you know,
agree. I'm with
that's
you
what
on
I
that.
Do. And cool. It's also though from a I'll say emotional or slash moral standpoint, it kind of sucks, because you're taking this object that's been looked at by our ancestors for eons now, and you're saying you want to start developing it. Well, that just ends up, you're just going to develop it just like any place. You know, it's like you bulldoze the forest to make a strip mall. You know, like that kind of thing. It's like if you develop the moon to be a moon base, it's going to become a military slash what's the word, like an airport transport hub type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to become industrialized, it's going to be taken over by humans, but I don't see any other way for human expansion and the human race to spread out into the galaxy or even our own solar system other than that happening. I guess the best way you can do it is do it sustainably.
That was a great answer. Great answer. Well, Alex, it has been a complete pleasure speaking with you today, and perhaps we can do this again if you have a big project coming up you'd like to talk about. But you too, guys.
Yes.
I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been a lot of fun, and glad we could finally get together, my fellow Connecticut.
Yes, I was. All right, Connecticut. Here we go.
Yep.
This was a great opportunity. Thank you. It's great to talk to you guys. I'm glad I could reschedule it first. It worked for us.
This was awesome. You've been a great guest, so thank you very much.
And good luck with the rest of your projects. We look forward to seeing everything you put out there, because everything you make is truly amazing, and we all love it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's more cool stuff to come, I promise. It's just, you gotta be patient. Patience is the
virtue.
The animator's mantra.
Definitely.
And we will definitely be patient and definitely look forward to everything you put out. So,
thanks again.
Yeah, have all a great day. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. See you later.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks to Alex for being so generous with his time, and thanks to everyone who stuck with us through this entire podcast. Please check out our sponsors and partners on the Brick Filmers Guild homepage, and don't forget to check out Cooper Studios' amazing brick films on his YouTube channel. If you would like to sponsor one of our podcasts, please contact me through one of our social media sites. We'd also like to thank Kevin MacLeod for his wonderful music, which we use for our podcasts and in our brick films. So until next time, bye y'all!